Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at wvhtf.org.
The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at wvaflcio.org.
At the legislature today, the bill to require inspection of above-ground storage tanks is poised to move through the Senate next week. The Senate Judiciary Chair doesn't think the legislation is moving too quickly. Meanwhile, the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection tells members of the House Finance Committee the budget cuts ordered by Governor Tomlin will not affect his agency's work. These stories coming up on the legislature today. I'm Ashton Mara. The Senate is taking the lead on legislation to protect the state's waterways and increase regulations on above-ground storage tanks. A combined version of both the governor's and the Senate's bills is expected to appear on the floor Monday. Meanwhile, a joint commission of lawmakers is continuing hearings with parties involved in the investigation of the chemical leak in Charleston. The Joint Legislative Oversight Commission on State Water Resources held its third hearing today related to the Kanawha Valley chemical leak, receiving testimony for the first time from those conducting the investigation. Chairman of the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, Rafael Morey Arasso, explained his team of four investigators is in the preliminary phases of an investigation that could take up to a year to complete. That team is headed by Johnny Banks.
As investigators, our goal is to determine the root cause of this incident. We are committed to our mission of prevention and promise this community a comprehensive report.
Banks says the CSB is consulting with experts in the area of tank design and construction who will soon inspect the tanks on Freedom Industries' site. They're reviewing company documents on the maintenance and inspection of the tanks, as well as the provided material safety data sheets detailing the toxicity of the chemicals. Those MSD sheets contained very little information about MCHM when the spill occurred, and even less about PPH. A second chemical also in the tank revealed only this week by Freedom officials. Banks called the lack of information shocking, and Chairman Morey Arasso said a recommendation to deal with those sheets will come from their investigation.
The government obligation is to find out what is in there, but the primary obligation is the people that is getting this chemical into commerce to provide the necessary toxicological information, and that is not happening, and that is something that we are going to be looking very carefully.
The PPH, again, we don't know how much of that. In your investigation, will you be able to determine how much of that has been released, how much of that is in this chemical or in this tank? Will we be able to determine that?
The comments that I have read from the CDC said that you will expect substantially lower contamination from PPH since the concentration is so small. But still, you know, when you are dealing with very active chemicals, I mean, these chemicals are created in industry to be reactive and to do the chemical work, even in small quantities, they affect human beings. They have the potential to affect human beings, and we should be worried about it. Definitely, they shouldn't be in drinking water, period, at any level.
Senator Bill Laird again questioned Banks on the information contained in the MSD sheets.
In most instances, the MSDSs are a little bit more definitive than in this particular incident?
As a general rule, yes. There's the notion of information contained in an MSDS being proprietary. When folks have a need to know, that information needs to be obtained in some way, shape, or form by, at minimum, the health professionals that would be tasked with providing health care to folks that are reporting with symptoms.
Banks told the committee so far their investigation has revealed the leaky tank was built before World War II, something that's not uncommon for infrastructure not just across the state but across the country, says Senator Ron Stallings.
Again, this was a pre-World War II tank. There's water lines and throughout
you know, my area, particularly southern West Virginia, that were put in there in the early 20th century. And I am glad that I heard you say, I was going to bring up that this cannot be a totally isolated incident to West Virginia. Mm-hmm. But this can be a wake-up call for all the other states.
And sometimes, for years and years and years, companies and communities peacefully coexist, and there's one event that really shakes their realities and reconfigures their norm. And we see this in most of the cases that we deploy to. Unfortunately, we've had to do that, you know, several times in this region over the past 5 years.
This is Banks's third investigation in the Kanawha Valley. His first came in 2008 when a tank holding pesticides exploded at the Bayer facility and institute. The second in 2010 after a highly toxic gas was released at the DuPont facility in Bell, killing an operator. Delegate Mike Menypenny questioned if those three incidents in such a short period meant a systemic problem in the valley.
The fact that we have been here over the past 5 years, three times for events where mechanical integrity has been, you know, prominent in each of those cases, that is a fair statement. But I wouldn't consign it just to West Virginia or the Kanawha Valley. There's an issue throughout most of the cases that we deploy to where mechanical integrity, procedures, systems, failures are commonplace and almost accepted.
General James Hoyer of the National Guard updated committee members on the testing still being conducted throughout the distribution system. Hoyer says Guard members are now testing for MCHM at 10 parts per billion, a fraction of the one part per million safety level initially given by the Centers for Disease Control.
Testing at the 10 part per billion level is the equivalent of looking for 6 drops of water in a 7,500-gallon milk tanker. So that's the level that, of intricacy of the process.
Hoyer says there have been no detectable levels of the PPH in the system. He added his interagency team says it will take another week of testing to ensure they meet the new testing level criteria throughout the entire system. Senate Bill 373, the bill regulating above-ground storage tanks, advanced through the committee process quickly this week, causing concern for some members of the upper chamber. Many expressed in a meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee they thought more time was necessary with the bill. The committee, however, advanced the legislation. Senator Corey Palumbo serves as chair.
It has moved more quickly than a lot of bills do in the legislature, but I think the public wants to see us act. I mean, I think the public is largely outraged by what happened in Charleston and how it's affected so many people in the state. So I think it's incumbent upon us to not only make sure we do it right, but that we do it quickly and efficiently.
Palumbo says leadership decided to give senators the weekend to digest the bill and prepare for proposed amendments on the floor next week.
Senate Bill 359, removing handcuffs.
Today, the House of Delegates passed two bills on third reading. House Bill 2477, permitting certain auxiliary lighting on motorcycles, and House Bill 2020, relating to conditions of bond for defendants in cases of crimes between family or household members. However, as Aaron Payne reports, the minds of the House Finance Committee members were still on the recent chemical spill.
The House Finance Committee went through two budget hearings on Friday, one from the Supreme Court and one from the DEP. Both groups laid out their proposed budgets and then followed up by updating the delegates on some of the progress their programs have made in the past year. Cabinet Secretary of the West Virginia DEP, Randy Huffman, presented the proposed budget to the committee, relating how the organization would deal with the governor's 7.5% cut. Huffman assured there would be no loss in personnel. However, paying the personnel a fair and competitive wage was a challenge. Delegate Ron Walters asked how proposed water protection legislation would affect the DEP financially.
Then that leads to the cost. You know, obviously, the more that's in that, and the more rules that impact, you're obviously going to need more inspectors. You're obviously going to need more field people. Do you have any ballpark number even right now?
Nothing. No, we're doing an inventory right now of the number of sites. But you know, now that we have the legislation somewhere close to, you know, where it's not moving as quickly, and we're not trying to grab moving pieces. We're going to try in the next few days to get an estimate of, and it's going to be an estimate only, of the number of sites. sites and then the number of tanks associated with those sites that would be regulated under this new format.
Delegate Nancy Guthrie followed up on Delegate Walter's question by asking about the recent testimony and report from Downstream Strategies and when those suggestions should be incorporated.
If those pieces of legislation come across here, then that might be the time then to consider incorporating that.
It's coming here next, so that would be up to you guys.
And have you read those recommendations?
When I read the first page of it, I was disappointed and didn't finish it.
Why?
Because it actually said that it accused the state of having an anti-regulatory philosophy that we actually could have made the requirements on this facility that we failed. That we didn't need any more legislation. Then it turned right around and said we do need more legislation and made some recommendations. So I got confused about exactly what their position was.
Earlier in the day, the committee heard from the administrative director of the West Virginia Supreme Court, Steve Canterbury. Canterbury assured the committee that the amount of money given to the Supreme Court was distributed throughout the entire court system in West Virginia. Also, 90% of the budget is used on salaries and benefits. Delegates wanted to know about the drug court system that the legislature made mandatory last year. Canterbury said the system is expanding and the benefits are starting to show.
But the rewards are extraordinary. Rather than spending $25,000 to $26,000 per year to incarcerate these offenders, each drug court participant costs the state about $7,100. The recidivism rate is hovering at just over 9% right now. Now, I want to tell you right now that that's a preliminary figure because you have to have a full 3 years before you can really measure recidivism. Lots of these haven't been up for 3 years. But we're saying 9% now. Nationally, the recidivism rate is about 25%. Now, some of you might think that's awfully high. But for drug offenders who go through the traditional route, nationally, and this number bears true in West Virginia, it's roughly a 75% recidivism rate. Because they're not getting the services they need. They go in an addict, they come out an addict. They go in abusing, they come out abusing.
Canterbury also briefly spoke about how West Virginia's business and domestic abuse court systems are improving and receiving accolades nationally. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
In a moment, we'll discuss this week's events at the Capitol with two of our colleagues from the press corps. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 428, to regulate the ownership of dangerous wild animals by creating a regulatory board consisting of the Commissioner of Agriculture, the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources, and the Director of the Division of Natural Resources or their designees. Senate Bill 429, to prohibit the State Board of Education from continuing to implement the Common Core assessments and requires the formation of a legislative Common Core committee to conduct statewide hearings on the Common Core standards. Senate Bill 431, to extend the renewal cycle of driver's licenses from 5 years to 8 years, provide an option to renew driver's licenses and identification cards online. Up for passage in the Senate on Monday, Senate Bill 12, to permit prescribing antibiotics for a sexually transmitted disease for the partner of a patient without first examining the partner. Senate Bill 208, to continue the Rural Health Initiative and clarifying funding mechanisms, auditing and reporting requirements, and strengthen accountability. Senate Bill 209, to require county boards of education to allow students with special needs to participate in graduation ceremonies with their peers. Senate Bill 310, adjusting penalties for willful failure to pay child support. And Senate Bill 359, to remove the hand canvassing requirement of electronic voting machines while leaving intact the recount provisions. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 251, to revise the article relating to arbitration and implement the terms of the Uniform Arbitration Act, and Senate Bill 373, relating to water resources protection. Every Friday, we'll check in with the journalists who are covering the state legislature for their perspective on the issues at this session. Back with us this week is Dave Boucher, the State House reporter for the Charleston Daily Mail, and Jonathan Mattis, covering his first legislative session as the State House reporter for the Associated Press. Thank you both for being here with us this evening. So let's start with the latest from Freedom Industries, the company responsible for the chemical leak. They made their first appearance in court this week, and Jonathan, you were there. Tell us what happened.
On Tuesday, they had their first bankruptcy hearing at the federal courthouse down in Charleston here. And basically what they were looking to do was get a $5 million loan approved through this court process that would have used a lender that essentially the company CEO ran himself. West Virginia American Water actually objected to this motion, basically because they claim that they're one of the biggest creditors because they were so affected by the spill itself. So their objection basically said this motion would have let the company foreclose on some of its more important assets while just leaving basically what they called the toxic, more dumpy conditions in sight in Charleston. So that's.
So what decision was made? Did they get any money after that hearing?
They ended up basically going into a back room for about a half hour, the two parties' lawyers, and agreeing on $4 million from that same lender that is run by J. Clifford Forrest, who basically owns the company that owns Freedom. And the change that happened in that process was they took out that potential for a lien to be held against some of the property at the higher level like that. So essentially what they wanted to cover was remediation costs at the site. Already, Gary Southern, the president of Freedom Industries, has said that they've spent $800,000 on remediation. They also wanted to keep paying their employees. They have 51 employees, I believe, and a little more than 30 of them are in West Virginia. And then the other thing that they said that they really wanted to cover was their most important vendors, saying that essentially they need to be moving products around to stay viable so they can continue in business.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that same day was the first time that any of us ever got word of there actually being a second chemical in that tank. We've heard of crude MCHM all along, but now this week we're getting word of this other chemical, PPH, that has now been said was mixed in that tank as well. Now, you wrote another story about that today saying that just because this is the first the state heard of it doesn't mean that hadn't been spread around.
Right, right. What DEP's Mike Dorsey said yesterday was that a company email was sent around internally at Freedom Industries that included that chemical leak and what that chemical was. But it was towards the bottom of the email, apparently, and Dorsey said that most people didn't get to the bottom of the email, and that's what he was told from Freedom Industries.
Wow, so that's a pretty shocking statement. But we are moving on at the State House. We are moving on in the legislature, and as we talked about earlier in the show, this bill is pushing quickly through the Senate. We expect to see it on the floor on Monday. But Dave, what are the basics? It's a complicated bill, hundreds of pages. But what are the basic provisions that this bill sets forth?
Sure, and they're similar to the provisions that have been outlined in the governor's bill. If you talk to the Senate Majority Leader Unger, he would not necessarily say that it's the same. But there's two basic portions. One focuses on regulating these above-ground storage tanks, and the other focuses on emergency preparedness. So for the above-ground storage tanks, right now the DEP is allowed to look at these sites if they have like a stormwater permit, which is something that Freedom Industries had. But they're not, according to Secretary Huffman, they're not allowed to set standards for what these tanks should look like or how these tanks should be built. And so both of these bills, actually the governor's bill and the Senate bill, they would be required to bring in a professional engineer who could certify the way that these tanks are made and inspect these tanks, and then be required to submit an annual report from that engineer to the DEP. So the DEP would have a better understanding of what these tanks are actually able to do. And on the other side, for emergency preparedness, it's calling on water providers and communities to just be a little bit better prepared for any sort of spill or emergency event like this. And so it's telling them to coordinate with local officials and work on a plan in the event that there is some sort of chemical or other spill that could potentially contaminate their water.
Now, this bill came out of the Senate Judiciary yesterday, and I think that was something like a 3.5-hour meeting discussing amendments to this bill. As we saw earlier, the Senate Judiciary Chair Corey Palumbo says, "We're not moving too quickly. We need to act. The public wants us to act." But, Jonathan, you spoke with the CSB, the Chemical Safety Board officials, after that meeting today, saying they also want the public to be involved in their investigation. How are they going about doing that?
Sure. Investigator Johnny Banks testified there, as you saw in the clips before. But what he said was this investigation could take basically a year is what the time frame looks like. But throughout the process, he said that there could be some updates, and if any updates happen, they would be included at a public meeting that would be held in Charleston. So that process would be obviously a benefit to the community down here. There's nothing set in stone just yet, but he said that that is a possibility.
There's also going to be a congressional hearing at some point here in Charleston, and that's something that some of our local, I guess, federal lawmakers have called for. Representative Capito and also Representative Ray Hall both talked about bringing a meeting of the Infrastructure and Transportation Committee here to Charleston. Representative Capito told us yesterday that she believes that it's going to be sometime in February in Charleston. They're still working out the details, but that should be another meeting where officials involved in the investigation and hopefully West Virginia American Water and maybe even someone from Freedom could, you know, potentially testify in front of Congress, which would also be beneficial for the public, potentially.
Right. A lot of interest at the state and federal level. But let's talk about what's going on at the actual site. What is the remediation process looking like at this point? Have you talked to the DEP?
Sure. I've talked to Mr. Dorsey as well. And at the Elk River site, which is where the spill happened, Freedom has hired a consultant. It's a consulting firm out of Pittsburgh. I gave them a call, and they said that they're not allowed to talk to me. But they're working and shifting from short-term remediation, which is, as Mr. Dorsey said, taking the low-hanging fruit of any remaining chemical pockets that they can find and moving into long-term remediation. And there's still a chance that there's a little bit of chemical either embedded somewhere in the ground or hung up on roots or trees that are stuck in the river. And so they're working on making a plan with this consultant on what they need to do. Now, this is the financial responsibility of Freedom. It's not, the DEP is not paying for that. And it's still unclear exactly where the money is coming from to pay for this consultant. As Jonathan said, there's money that's involved in the bankruptcy proceeding that allows them to pay for remediation. But there are still concerns among them by a company called Baker. And that's actually where we can look at the second site that's involved, and that's a site called Poca Blending in Nitro. That's where the company moved the remainder of the MCHM and the contaminated water from the Elk River site. They were told that they had to move this chemical into these double-walled tanks that are made by Baker, but they didn't have all the tanks before they said they would move them into these separate, more secure tanks. And Baker is a little bit concerned about selling them these tanks because they're not sure they can actually get the money. And so that's something that they're still trying to work out.
And
right
that
now.
Money is, we believe, maybe coming from something that they're getting at this bankruptcy hearing. But again, maybe we're not so sure. But thank you both so much for being with us tonight. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back again. And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4284, to create the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act for reasonable accommodations for periods of rest, assistance with manual labor, light duty assignments, or modified work schedules. House Bill 4292, to provide funding for substance abuse services through increased taxes on beer, wine, and liquor. The bill creates a prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery fund to fund substance abuse programs. House Bill 4300, to establish a West Virginia Animal Abuse Registry by the West Virginia State Police, requiring registration of persons convicted of certain crimes of animal abuse. House Bill 4306, to discontinue the moratorium on the issuance of commercial rafting licenses on a section of the New River, generally known as the Upper New River. House Bill 4318, to require the Cabinet Secretary of the Department of Veterans Assistance to work with the various medical, social work, and counseling boards to propose continuing education requirements focused on mental health issues faced by veterans and their families. House Bill 4331, to prohibit a government entity from obtaining the location information of an electronic device without a search warrant. House Bill 4335 to declare a child's right to nurse and making a public statement by the legislature that nursing in a public place is socially acceptable. Up for passage in the House on Monday, House Bill 4006 to amend the code related to the possession and distribution of child pornography. The bill also creates enhanced penalties for offenders who intentionally view, possess, distribute, or transmit a large quantity of such images. On second reading, Senate Bill 2387, allowing persons with disabilities who need service animals to have them under the West Virginia Fair Housing Act. And House Bill 4217 to require an annual report containing information about Medicaid-managed care be provided to the Legislative Oversight Commission on Health and Human Resources. This has been the Legislature Today. We welcome your comments. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and like us on Facebook. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org, and by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org. West Virginia Public Radio, telling West Virginia's story, and online at wvpublic.org. By the way, if you tuned in late, you can hear the legislature on podcast via our website, wvpublic.org. You can also catch it weeknights at 6:30 and also at 11:30 on West Virginia PBS.